Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you today and where are you?
Well, Ron, I'm absolutely fantastic. I'm up in Wisconsin today. A little chilly, but the sun is shining and it's going to be a beautiful day.
That's super, and it's nice down here in Atlanta also. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that entrepreneurs, our listeners, can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're featuring Chuck Detling of Wagner, Johnston, and Rosenthal. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I will, Ron. Today, our sponsor is Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing is your one-stop source for all your marketing, sales, and business development needs. We customize and implement a business strategy to help build your business, grow your sales, and encourage your success.
That's super. Well, you know, Chuck Detling is an attorney. He's a shareholder at Wagner, Johnston, and Rosenthal, and he practices in the litigation group of Wagner, Johnston, and Rosenthal and represents corporate clients in a variety of legal matters, from defending business tort and breach of contract actions to defending negligence and product liability claims. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
It's quite good to be here.
Well, you know, Chuck, one of the things we wanted to talk a little bit about today and help our listeners with is having a record management policy for your company. Can you explain the record management and what the policy should be and talk to our listeners about it a little bit?
Sure. This is becoming increasingly important, you know, with all the new federal laws, with Sarbanes-Oxley and with HIPAA and with some of the new federal regulations. Concerning financial compliance, even small businesses are required to think a lot more about what kind of records that they create and how they're going to maintain those records. And so one of the things that we're seeing at Wagner Johnston is even in small firms with only a handful of employees, if they're in the financial services industry or if they are in any way dealing with customer data, sensitive data like financial numbers or even innocuous data like names and addresses, that they've got to start to become vigilant about what kind of records that they're producing and how they're securing those records, and then obviously making sure that they can find those records if the time comes, you know, if they're ever faced with an IRS audit or God forbid a lawsuit. And so one of the things that we're seeing is that even smaller firms are starting to put together formalized and written records management plans. And a records management plan doesn't have to be sophisticated. You know, we've drafted some here that are 4 or 5 pages. We've drafted some that are over 100 pages. It all has to do with the kind of records that your company you know, produces and how sophisticated that the company is.
It could be digital or paper form.
Yeah, everybody wants to focus on the digital records, and then we ultimately forget about the paper records. You know, even small, and of course, everybody wants to focus on email. Everybody, most of my clients will call and say, "Chuck, I want to start destroying emails. I've got all these emails, and I've got employees with inboxes full of 10 years worth of email, and I don't know what's in there, and I'm scared that what's in there is going to come hurt me." So it's almost always the client comes with a question about email, and the very first step is to look at all the records that a company might create. And so, obviously, that involves both paper records and electronic records. Most companies have an identical paper copy of an electronic record, and so that's something we have to deal with when you've got the same record in two different forms that's physically in two different places and that has two different custodians. So to answer your question, you have to think about all of it. And obviously, depending upon your industry and the kind of company you have, you may generate more paper records than electronic records. Companies that manufacture and produce things still have records of all their shipments, and those records tend to be bills of lading, and they still tend to be paper, and they still tend to be stapled to a sales order somewhere and sitting in a file cabinet, generally in the back of a warehouse, and that's a record that has to be accounted for. But mostly the focus is on electronic records, and you're seeing companies go more and more to a paperless system. But you can't forget about the paper records either.
Well, Chuck, you know, there's a movie, I think it's called The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, where one of the famous lines is, "Badges, we don't need no stinking badges." What can happen to a company that doesn't have a records management policy?
Well, the nice thing is, and of course I look at this more from a litigation standpoint, a client has been sued, or a client wants to bring suit against somebody else, or oftentimes a client is a third party that just happens to have records that might be important to somebody else's suit. And the federal law and most state laws give you what we call the safe harbor, which means if you have a records management plan in place, and that plan says that we're going to destroy a certain record after a year or after 6 months or after 30 days, and you destroy that record in compliance with that records management plan, then you're usually fine. If you don't have the record, you're not going to be sanctioned by the court. You're not going to be fined. You're not going to have to pay any sort of costs. Where you get into problems is when you have an organization that doesn't have a records management plan and has destroyed some records ad hoc and has no fixed timetable on when to destroy records. And what we've seen is in large organizations, huge sanctions in the millions and tens of millions of dollars. And even beyond sort of monetary sanctions, what the court is going to assume, and let's say an email or electronic record is relevant to a lawsuit, and the plaintiff or the defendant in a case asks you for that record and you can't produce it, if the court determines that record is relevant, you can get what's called an adverse jury instruction, which means that the court can say to the jury, and this is very harmful if you're a defendant in the case, the court can say to the jury, look, feel free to assume that whatever was in this record is harmful to the defendant's case, and that's called an adverse jury instruction. The court can award sanctions. The court can award one side to pay the other side's attorney's fees. The court can award costs. I've seen the court dismiss lawsuits. And so, of course, that's the arena that I spend most of my time in. But you've got all sorts of other regulatory issues. Like I said, Sarbanes-Oxley, is huge if you're dealing with any sort of financial records or any sort of records that are governed by Sarbanes. You've got to keep those. And if they're destroyed or if you can't find them, then you face sanctions from the SEC or other organizations. Of course, you have HIPAA. If you're dealing with any sort of medical records, you're required to preserve those records and keep them safe. And there's a myriad of other state rules and other federal rules, and that's all dependent upon the kind of industry and the kind of business that you're in. But let me just emphasize that this is something that you need to have in place regardless of the size of the organization. There are a lot of entrepreneurs who are starting internet organizations or internet companies where they're selling a good or a service, and in their databases they've got the financial some financial records for hundreds and thousands of people. You're under a requirement to make sure that not only is that secure, but that you can pull those records if you need to. So it's something everybody has to keep in mind.
It almost sounds like you're guilty till proven innocent.
Well, you really are. Five or 6 years ago, you could get away with not having a written records management plan. Most of my clients are businesses that have been burned. I deal a lot in the $40 to $50 million revenue range. And we've got a number of companies who've come to us. They've been a defendant or even a plaintiff in litigation and haven't been able to find that that key email. You can take some common sense steps to get started. The very first thing that every manager has to understand is, what kind of records are we creating? And you can go in, and even if it's only writing it down on a sheet of paper, create a data map. Where physically are our records? What are we keeping in certain file cabinets? What are we keeping online? Where online is it? What are we archiving? What are we backing up? What records are being transferred onto PDAs and portable storage devices? What records are sitting on employees' laptops? One of the large payroll processors got hit with a large fine. Actually, this happened several times because they've lost financial records of customers. And in situations like that, you actually get sanctioned on a per record basis. So let's say you're a large payroll processor, and I won't use any names, and a manager has got a laptop that has the name of 10,000 customers, you know, that you handle payroll for, and that gets lost. You're going to get fined, you know, a dollar or two per record. You know, not to mention any civil litigation that might start, or the loss of reputation risk. You know, when it comes out that data is not secure.
You know, so, I was thinking of Chuck. The fact it happened to my organization actually yesterday. We accept credit cards for some of our clients, and we've had the same client for 2 years. And Mike and I were talking about we've stored his MasterCard number. How would a company store that? Yeah, I probably am not storing it right, or maybe we don't store it.
Well, I mean, you know, that's something that every organization, you know, has got to decide for itself. Obviously, there's some utility to being able to do the, you know, sort of the one-click shopping that you see on Amazon or some of these other
right.
sites where they've stored your financial information. But there's obviously some liability, you know, that goes along with that as well. And so, you know, each organization is going to have to develop their own internal controls and satisfy themselves that they're providing, you know, proper security. You know, one of the things that you've got to be careful, you know, of as an executive or a manager of an organization is that under some of these laws, and I'm thinking about Sarbanes-Oxley right now, which has to do with financial reporting, corporate executives are explicitly responsible, you know, for establishing and monitoring the effectiveness of those internal controls. So there are situations where an executive can himself be personally liable for not having this in place. So
in writing this policy, are there guidelines from the government that says you have to keep records for so many years, or how do you create a policy and follow the guidelines so you're correct?
Yeah, well, what you're talking about is something called a retention schedule, and a retention schedule is actually, you know, the easiest of the parts of the record management to comply with. And so, a retention schedule is a simple document that lists the names of the records produced, along with the agreed retention period and the disposal method. How do you decide how long you have to keep certain records? Well, you know, you're going to have to ask experts. You know, accountants are going to tell you to keep your tax returns for 5 or 7 years. A lawyer is going to tell you to keep a written contract for 5 years or 6 years or 7 years, depending upon what the statute of limitations is for written contracts. And so if you are not talking to professionals, an HR professional is going to tell you how long you want to keep employee evaluations, how long you want to keep job applications or employee reviews. So, you know, while there are some best practices out there, it's all going to be state specific, and you know, there's an extent to which you're going to have to spend a little bit of time and a little bit of effort deciding how long you have to keep these records. What's right in Georgia is not necessarily going to be what's right in Illinois.
So is it the state, for instance, we have employees in other states and we have customers in other states, so my company is based in Illinois, so do I go by the Illinois laws or do I go by the law of the employee in the state they're in?
Well, you know, I don't want to give you any explicit advice not knowing your exact situation, but I will tell you that it's a balancing act. You have got to run your company first, and you can't have a records management plan that hinders your ability to do what's most important, and that is serve your customers in the best way possible. I have advised clients in the past who have been what we call multi-jurisdictional in one of two ways. Either A, you find the most restrictive jurisdiction, the one that requires that you keep the records the longest, and you set your retention schedules to that, or B, you go and you try to find a nice happy medium. And that medium is having an effective policy in place, you know, while also having a policy that allows your employees to do their job and not constantly think about, okay, do I need to destroy this record? You know, one of the things that I like clients to focus on is that, you know, we're producing tons of records. I mean, even a small business today, I mean, you know, Ron and Bill, I know how many emails you send out or receive a day, but I'm sure it's in the dozens, if not in the hundreds. So you have individuals who are creating hundreds of email records a day, And, you know, along with that comes a certain liability. And so one of the things we like to do is spend time talking about training. You know, you can't just have a policy without having any sort of accountability or having any sort of audit. I'm giving a presentation next week on effective use of email, and that's something everyone needs to think about. Just because the law requires you to preserve a record once you've created it, the law doesn't require you to create a dangerous record. And so one of the things that we talk about is, you know, how to use email effectively. And so every company needs to have an email policy, you know, one that says, you know, we're not going to use the email, you're not going to use personal emails or a business email for personal things. How do you properly format a subject line? You know, when do you reply to all? When do you forward an email? You know, when do you use attachments? When do you forward an attachment? Simple things like this that can give a business owner the peace of mind that the employee is not recklessly sending out an email. And, you know, as soon as you hit that send button, you can't hit unsend. And so one of the things we do is spend a lot of time training employees on why they don't have to create a record. You know, if you're worried about how something is going to look in 5 years, and that's always how this comes out. I'm in court, and the lawyer asked my client to identify a record, and it's an email from 5 years ago. And on its face, the email looks really bad, and that's because we don't have the five emails that came before it and the five emails that came after it that give that email some context. And so one of the things that I ask everybody to think about before they hit send on an email is, what is this going to look like, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, in a vacuum? And, you know, and unfortunately, when people write emails, they're often dashed off very, very quickly without a whole lot of thought. And so, you know, we're training people on how better to use emails. And if you can't use email, pick up the phone, you know. Obviously, there's no record created when the phone's picked up, or walk down the hall and pop into your neighbor's office and have a conversation that way. So that's
important. What about texting?
Say that again?
What about texting?
You know, texting is really interesting. Right now, and I'm going to get burned on this, but this is the advice that I'm giving people. Certainly, a text is a record. And by the way, you know, the definition of a record is anytime we take information and we put it into some sort of tangible, you know, or physical form. That's all a record is. It's information that's written down, or information that's put in an electronic format. Texting, if you talk to AT&T or you talk to any of the cellular companies, they will tell you that while they have a record that a text has been sent, the text itself is ephemeral. It disappears. You cannot go to AT&T and subpoena, you know, what text person A sent to person B. Now, that text does exist on both phones, but I'll tell you, certain phones, and I believe the iPhone, for instance, is one of these, as soon as that text is deleted, it's not recoverable. And so one of the things the court's struggling with is, how do we deal with all these new technologies? So to answer your question, right now there is no requirement that text messages be preserved. Not to say that the technology won't evolve at some point where you can. Another interesting one is instant messaging. Some organizations use instant messaging internally. Cisco's got a program called CUPSI, which a lot of organizations use. The law is sort of evolving on instant messaging. It's interesting. If you have a logging feature on your instant messaging system, you can't shut that off. You have to leave it on. It doesn't mean you can't come in and delete those records later pursuant to a retention schedule. But there is actually case law out there that suggests that if you have a logging feature, you have to use that logging. So it's interesting.
Okay, well, Chuck, without naming any names, can you give us some examples of companies that have faced fines or sanctions for not having a policy on record retention schedule?
Oh, look, I don't mind naming names. Some of the most famous cases out there are involving Merrill Lynch and Bank of America, large organizations, UBS Warburg, which is a large international commercial bank and investment banking company, lost what we call the seminal case in the e-discovery area, a case called Zubalaki or Zubalake versus UBS Warburg. And I'll walk you through the case real quick. It's interesting. This was a woman who brought a harassment claim against UBS Warburg and said she was fired for being a woman. And she requested certain emails be produced. And UBS Warburg could not produce those emails. I believe they had them somewhere, but they may have been archived and they may have been off-site, and they were not able to produce those emails in a timely manner. They were hit with huge sanctions in the millions of dollars, and I believe ended up losing a $28 million case. I've seen much smaller sanctions where a company has to pay, you know, $5,000 in attorney's fees, or, you know, once again, what I think is even more damaging oftentimes, which are these sort of non-monetary sanctions where the court says, you know, look, the defendant knew that they were being sued. And let me take a step back. You have a retention schedule that says that you're going to keep records for a certain amount of time and you're going to delete them pursuant to the schedule. There's something called a litigation hold. And as soon as you realize that potential records might be relevant in a lawsuit, you have a duty to stop deleting those records. And that's why it's so important that you know where your records are. So let's use, for example, Toyota, who's facing a number of lawsuits over bad brakes. Well, as soon as Toyota becomes aware that they're potentially going to be sued, they've got to put a litigation hold in place, which means they've got to contact every one of their employees, every one of these records custodians, and say, look, if you have any document that is relevant to this lawsuit, and they'll go in and they'll describe what they think is relevant, you have to suspend your document destruction policy as it relates to those emails. And for a company like Toyota, that could be millions of emails. That could be millions of financial records. That could be millions of written records. So if you've got remember I told you earlier you have this safe harbor, which says that if you delete records pursuant to your retention schedule, you're going to be fine. So if Toyota has a retention schedule that says we're going to delete every email after 30 days and we're going to delete every financial record after a certain amount of time, and then they get sued and it turns out they've deleted those records, they're not going to be sanctioned. But if they don't have a schedule and if they don't have a plan and they've deleted those, it's likely that they're going to face stiff penalties. So that's the real reason why you need to have a plan in place, so you can go into court or go to the IRS or go to the SEC and say, you know, look, I don't have these records and I wish I did, but I'm not in the business of storing emails forever. You know, I'm not in the business of buying extra server space so that I can keep, you know, all these different electronic records. And as soon as a record loses its usefulness for me, our policy is to destroy it. So, but you're seeing all sorts of sanctions, you know, especially as judges are becoming a little more sophisticated about these electronic records. Remember also, if you're a plaintiff, if you think you've got a case against somebody, you have an obligation as well to preserve the records that A, are going to help your case, but B, may help the defendant in his defense or in a countersuit that he has, and you can certainly have your case as a plaintiff dismissed for not having those records.
So, recommend a small business owner do their own policy, Chuck, or would you recommend they go to a professional?
Well, you know, part of the problem is, you know, aside from myself and maybe a handful of others that work with small businesses and medium-sized businesses, there are not a whole lot of professionals out there that can help you. I'll tell you that there is, if you're going to hire somebody like me, it's a $10,000 to a $50,000 project, and obviously that cost is a little high for most entrepreneurs and most startups. So what you can do is, and it's a four or five step process. The first step is going to go on and document what kind of records you're creating, and that of course is going to be dependent upon what kind of business you know that you're in. You know, are you creating financial records? Are you creating sales records? You know, orders, receipts, that sort of thing. You know, what sort of employment records are you creating? Go in and literally document every single record that you're creating. And then you want to decide who's the custodian of that record. And if you're a small business that only has one or two employees, that's going to be pretty easy. But obviously the custodian of your HR records is going to be your human resources person. And the custodian of your financial records is probably going to be your CFO or your controller. And the custodian of your sales records might be someone in accounts. And so go in and figure out who are the custodians of each of these records. And then spend some time figuring out your IT infrastructure. And this is important. You know, oftentimes small businesses have one sort of go-to person, you know, and he is the jack of all trades for the IT system. Make sure that more than one person has an understanding of how the server works, how the archiving system works, how the backup tape works. If you're outsourcing it, you know, make sure that there is some internal understanding of how that outsourcing works. Is your email system a POP system or an IMAP system? And that's important because the emails are going to reside physically in different places depending upon that. And go in and make a data map. Here's our data. Here's where it physically resides, you know, electronically. You know, then go in and do a little bit of research and try and figure out what are the applicable retention periods for us. I'll tell you a good place to look if you're in a state is you can Google records management policy for either the state archives or a state university. Universities and state archives tend to be leading organizations for getting their records management houses in order. There are a number of third-party sites you can look at. And so if you Google records management, you'll see a plethora of information out there on the Internet. This might be where you want to spend a couple bucks and hire an attorney. You know, and I wouldn't think that this would be anything more than a few hours for an attorney to go in and give you an idea of how long you need to keep written records, how long you need to keep employment records, you know, that sort of thing. And just develop a simple retention schedule. And then the next step is to go in and decide, well, here's what the law requires of us. What are our business needs? How long do we need to keep sales orders? So let's say you're an organization that sells widgets and you offer a 30-day return. Obviously, you know, the bare minimum you're going to have to keep those sales receipts and that information is 30 days. Maybe that's longer depending upon the kind of organization that you've got. But generally, you don't want to keep a record any longer than you need to. Once that record stops serving a legitimate business interest, let's go ahead and destroy it. It's just liability at that point. So decide to what extent you need to keep records longer than the mandated retention periods. And then once you've done that, you go in and write a policy. It doesn't have to be complicated. It basically says, these are the records. These are when we're going to destroy them. This is how we're going to destroy them. And then the final two steps are you need to have a written record of when you destroy records, okay, somewhere, and it can be, you know, on a scrap of paper in a folder. On this day, these backup tapes were destroyed pursuant to our management policy, and somebody signs it. And then finally, you have to do you know, quarterly or yearly training and audits to make sure that the policy is being followed. The only thing worse than not having a policy is having a policy and ignoring it. That will absolutely get a company killed.
Well, Chuck, from a timing standpoint, when an entrepreneur is, you know, having an idea and they're putting everything together, do they not even open their doors, you know, for their first product or service until they have a records management, or can they do that later?
I would have something in place. You know, if right now you've got an idea and it's just an idea, it's smart business practice to document the fact that you've come up with this idea. And so you want to have a plan in place that says that, you know, I'm going to keep email records until I get a trademark in place or until I get my patent approved. And I'm going to keep certain electronic records. So early on, your records management plan might be, I'm going to keep everything. And I may modify that later. You know, obviously, there's a balancing act. You know, you're out there trying to build your business. You can't spend a ton of time worrying about records management. But I would certainly go in and even if it's something that's done in a page or two page document, this is how I'm going to handle the electronic records that I create. And I think that's just smart business planning. And then once you get bigger, take the time, spend the money to do something a little more formal.
Well, Chuck, you've given, I think you probably scared the socks off of all of our listeners.
I'm speechless.
yeah. So, but really appreciate you being on the show today, Chuck. I mean, our listeners are really going to appreciate sharing your experiences and your insights in this area.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on.
Okay, well, this has been super. It's been another great show, Bill.
It really has, Ron, and it's really important, you know, I think for our listeners to hear interviews like we have with Chuck just now, because there's so many things as an entrepreneur and a business owner that you really have to think about.
Yeah, that's for certain. And I do want to mention the website where Chuck works. You know, it's www.wjrlaw.com, so it's wjrlaw.com. And Chuck's a really good fellow and obviously very knowledgeable in this area. Well, go ahead, Bill.
I want to give a special thanks today for our sponsor, Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. We go the extra step so you don't have to fret. Visit our website at www.entrepreneursales.com.
And to listen to this show again, you can go to our website at http://thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen again to today's show plus previous shows. This is Ron Reardon, Bill McHenry, signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.